case. Now you have people who are thirsty, you have animals which are thirsty. Are you going to deprive them of water, or are you going to give them water? Basically, if we can make it simple, are you going to allow them to live or make them die? And Imam Hussein alayhi salam made the call to make them live. This is, if we can call it, the least is an act of kindness towards your fellow human beings, not even your fellow Muslims or your fellow family or friends or whatever. Just towards human beings is an act of kindness. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in this act, he exercised his right to human rights and gave them water and gave them life. Even though the same people have deprived him of the same thing 10 days later or 20 days later or whatever it took them to get to Karbala. Now, before I continue this, let's take a short break and then we will continue right after.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity. We were saying that Imam Hussein alayhi salam done an act of kindness, and he exercised the best of human rights by quenching the thirst of his enemy and their horses. What can we learn from this? We can learn so much from this action. Sometimes we can learn from it when it comes to us as believing men and women with one another and with our foes and with our enemies. Now, me and you, sometimes we get into problems and arguments and fights and this and that, and we become like such enemies to the extent that we refuse to talk to one another, or to the extent that we see in some countries, some Muslim countries, sadly, they literally kill one another over an argument or over something very stupid. We do not exercise the right of kindness towards one another. Me and you as human beings, I have a duty towards you as much as you have a duty towards me. I need to be kind and merciful to you, and you need to be kind and merciful to me. And under no circumstance should I try to plot and try to kill you, nor should you do the same. Now, if we learn anything from Imam Hussein alayhi salam in this trip of his, is that act. That between ourselves, sometimes from the same school of thought or from the same religion, we need to exercise love, peace, and mercy with one another. And we need to put our differences aside because we're on the same team. I do wrong by you, you forgive me. You do wrong by me, I forgive you. For the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is when it comes to the one house, right? In the same community. When it comes to our enemies, it's the same thing as well. Imam Ali alayhi salam, if you guys remember, we spoke about this in many episodes, that he said people are of two kinds, either brother in faith or equal in humanity. Our foes and our enemies, they are still equal in humanity. Now, obviously, when it comes to the art of war, and you know, dealing with your enemies, obviously there are specific conditions, but generally speaking, we're meant to be merciful and kind to them when they are at a point of weakness, at a point where they can't do much, and when they're trying to die. We have the duty to save the lives of people, not take it. Now, even the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he used to go to war, he used to tell people, do not attack anyone who's injured. Do not attack anyone who's running away. Do not even take prisoners. Try to show mercy, love, and compassion towards people. That's just the basic rights that I have to give as much as they have to give to me. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he exercised the notion of kindness at its best. When he's trying to picture Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he himself and his companions are trying to quench the thirst of their enemies who are loaded with weapons and swords and arrows and spears and just ready to kill them and shed their blood. And you see these people, Imam Hussein and his companions, they were wearing their normal clothes with no armor and just peacefully trying to quench their thirst. It's a picture that really moves a human being and makes him wonder, like, what do I stand in terms of this human rights? Do I want to kill people? Do I want to save people? So let us learn from this message of kindness of Imam Hussein alayhi salam when it comes to human rights and our fellow human beings. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
In the limelight. During the year after Donald Trump entered the Oval Office, threats of violence or even death against lawmakers of both parties increased more than fourfold, says Andrea Mazzarino Ryder in an article published under the heading Arm to the Teeth, America has an anger problem. Stay tuned for more. Increasingly, it seems, Americans have an anger problem. All too many of Americans now have the urge to use name-calling, violent social media posts, threats, baseball bats, and guns to do what they once did with persuasion and voting. For example, during the year after Donald Trump entered the Oval Office, threats of violence or even death against lawmakers of both parties increased more than fourfold. And too often, the call to violence seems to come from the top. Recently, the defendants in cases involving extremist violence have claimed that an elected leader or pundit told them to do it. In a country where a sitting president would lunge at his own security detail in rage, we guess this isn't so surprising anymore. Emotion rules the American political scene, and so many now tend to shoot from the hip without even knowing why. Increasing number of Americans, however, respond to the growing extremity of the moment by avoiding the latest headlines and civic engagement, fearful that some trauma will befall them even by witnessing the news. As a psychotherapist who works with veterans and military families, an expert often speaks with folks who have decided to limit their news intake or have stopped following the news altogether. Repeated mass shootings in places ranging from schools to houses of worship, combined with increased visibility and influence of militias at theoretically peaceful demonstrations, can be more scaring than the wounds soldiers once sustained in combat zones. According to the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law, 45 state legislatures in the U.S. have considered 230 bills that would criminalize the threat of violent leftist or black protest. And sadly enough, far-right activists are anything but a fringe minority movement as they challenge the very idea of peaceful elections and public protests that aren't theirs. To be sure, left-wing violence and combative rhetoric is a thing in this country, the United States, albeit a small one. The shooting of a Trump supporter by an Antifa protester in Portland, Oregon, during a Black Lives Matter demonstration in August 2020 is the lone example of a lethal attack by that left-wing group or other anti-fascists over the past 25 years. Of the 450 murders by political extremists during the last decade, approximately 4% of them were committed by left-wing groups and about 75% by right-wing, white supremacist, anti-government ones. So, what are Americans to do? As a start, given where the Trumpist movement and much of the Republican Party seems to be heading, Americans really need to do something, almost anything. As Michigan Secretary of State Jacqueline Benson, a Democrat, pointed out, facing the growing crisis on the right, I have seen no significant increase in support from national party leaders than what we experienced in 2018 when party vigilance was significant enough, but not nearly what was needed, unquote. A headline of an article in the satirical online newspaper The Onion caught the mood of the moment among progressives. Left-wing group to disorganized for FBI agents to infiltrate. In it, a fictional FBI agent says, "These people don't ever do anything violent. They don't ever do anything at all." Recently, a local Democratic candidate in Maryland knocked on doors seeking name and contact information as a possible volunteer for his campaign. It turned out, however, he wasn't even carrying a pen or paper. Ironically, one government institution that has at least made a nod toward countering right-wing violence is the U.S. military. Since the January 6 attacks, the Department of Defense under Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has acknowledged an increase in domestic extremist violence carried out by active duty or reserve service members. In response, he initiated a multi-pronged strategy to screen new recruits, educate military personnel about extremism, and begin investigating extremist activity within the ranks. As partisan rhetoric heats up in the United States, progressives are guilty of focusing too hard on the most politicized identity issues, however valuable or even whatever. Asini behavior ignites behaviors and airwaves at a given moment, be it Trump's QAnon-style conspiracy mongering or ex-New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's groping. The problem is that as the Trumpists ramp up their anger, if progressives don't find a unifying message of community and love and find it soon, the guns already out there may be put to use in unspeakable ways. Progressives would do well to step back and think about the genuine big tent issues, like how to show everyone from white suburban women to rural farmers to black single parents that they have so much to lose in life if Americans don't have a government willing to continue regulating healthcare and doing so in a far better fashion. They would gain so much if, in this all too angry country of Americans, they could focus their attention on the importance of childcare for every family who needs it. Above all, if they could focus in an intense way on the ever more dangerous world they're living in, that would be a positive. Whether or not they agree on what's causing global warming, it's hard not to agree right now that they're living in an ever hotter, ever more drought-stricken, ever more extreme America. Why can't agree that it's already damn hot and the summer's just beginning?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, refusal to accept injustice. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we're going to talk about the refusal to accept the injustice. This was a characteristic that happened, that took place in the life of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not accept injustice. He stood against injustice. He refused to accept injustice. Among the characteristics of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was the illuminated quality of refusal to accept oppression, so much so that he earned the title of Abi Dhayyim. Abi Dhayyim in English means one who refuses to be oppressed. This is one of the most well-known titles of the Holy Imam alayhi salam, because his eminence was a lofty example of this quality. It was he who raised the slogan of human greatness and constructed the path of honor and respect. Thus, he did not bend before the monkeys of Bani Umayyah. He preferred death in the shade of spears. Abdullah Aziz bin Nubata is reported to be saying, "And Hussein alayhi salam considered death with honor as life, and considered life with degradation as death." You know, the famous historian Yaqubi has described his eminence, has described Imam Hussein as the Shahidul Izza. Shahidul Izza means the most respectable martyr. Imam Hussein was a respectable martyr because he was one who could never accept any injustice. He refused to accept any type of injustice. Whenever he sees that this is not okay, this is against the justice, this is against the way of Allah, Imam Hussein stood and he said no to that. A very important characteristic that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had and portrayed to us in order for us to stand and to study from his lifestyle.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hossein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we're talking about the non-acceptance of injustice, the characteristic of non-acceptance of injustice of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. That Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam never in his life accepted injustice. He refused oppression right away when he saw it from the people, when he saw it from anyone who was at the time living, whether it's a ruler or is a sahaba or he's against him or he's with him. So he stood against injustice, and this is a trait that is known of him. People know Imam Hussein to be with this particular characteristics. It's in his character, it's in his personality. Ibn Abil Hadid is reported to be saying, the chief of the magnanimous ones and destroyer of oppression taught the people that honor and death under the shade of swords is better than acceptance of dishonor. Aba Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam was such that he preferred safety for himself and his companions, but he did not accept humiliation on the basis of his aim, so that it may not be that Ibn Ziyad does not kill them and dishonors them in some way. He preferred death through it, stood bad rulers of the time. He stood to them in a manly way. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. And deep silence, feel the air.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Tensions are still high between China and Taiwan. The flare-up comes days after the provocative visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the island. Officials in Chinese Taipei have rejected the one-country, two-systems plan proposed by China for the self-ruled island. Taipei says that only the Taiwanese can decide the island's future. The reaction came after China published a white paper on Taiwan, which Beijing says shows the resolute determination of Beijing to peacefully resolve the unification issue. The paper lays out China's position on the self-ruled island. It says Beijing would never allow any attempt to separate Taiwan, but also would make every effort to achieve unification through peaceful means. Taiwan has accused Beijing of using House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit as, quote, an excuse to destroy the status quo. Pelosi visited the island on August 2nd, despite vehement protests from China.
What they want to do with Taiwan is fight. U.S. wants to fight China to the last Taiwanese. If not to the last Japanese, if not enough, then to the last Korean. Ultimately, the U.S. will not fight the wars. It will finance them. It will give weapons. It will antagonize us. It will antagonize both sides. And that's what they want to do. And it's actually a replica to the World War II.
Beijing reacted with an unprecedented burst of military around the island. The drills lasted for several days. Taiwan has also launched live fire drills in the wake of China's largest ever military exercises. The white paper issued by China this week was the third document of its kind over Taiwan. The previous editions were the Taiwan Question and Reunification of China, which was published in 1993, and the One China Principle and the Taiwan Question, which came out in 2000. China insists differences in the social systems in mainland and Taiwan are, quote, neither an obstacle to reunification nor a justification for secessionism. But Beijing says it will not rule out the military option to achieve such reunification.
What China wants to do with this white paper is just to find a way with Taiwan to get it back to its sense, because reunification will happen. The problem is that if it doesn't happen peacefully, it will happen by force. China doesn't want to do it by force, but it's being pushed on the corner by the US, because the US is actually slowly declaring Taiwan independent.
Speaker Pelosi's controversial visit has undermined the One China policy, which is recognized by nearly all countries of the international community, including the United States. Under the policy, the international community recognizes Taiwan as part of China, and the U.S. is committed to recognizing and having formal ties with China rather than the island of Taiwan. But Washington, contrary to its stated policy, continues to undermine China's sovereignty and courts the secessionist government in Taipei.
So what is the one country, two system? It was applied actually the first time is in Hong Kong. And so since the handover in 1997, they applied the one country, two system. The way it was done in Hong Kong was that Hong Kong could keep its a very high degree of autonomy. And actually they did it for Hong Kong. And it was a way, a showcase that they could show to Taiwan to say, well, in case you were to reunify with the mainland, this would be the system.
China has proposed the one country, two systems model to win Taiwan back. The policy allowed the Chinese government to successfully solve the question of Hong Kong through diplomatic negotiations with the British government. Hong Kong was under colonial British rule since the 19th century. China resumed to exercise its sovereignty over the island on July 1, 1997.
But what happened in Hong Kong was that you had the external forces. You had a massive amount of money being poured by NED, National Endowment for Democracy, and you had the usual suspect, the whole team of regime change working for the US, the MI6, and they did everything to destroy the one country, two system in Hong Kong, and that ended up with the riots. And then in 2020, you had the national security law.
Under the model, offshore regions like Hong Kong remain under China's sovereignty but can retain their own economic and administrative systems. Now China insists the same model could be applied to Taiwan.
Iran is making giant leaps in its peaceful space program. Iran has just launched its Khayyam satellite into orbit. The satellite was sent into space from the Moscow-operated Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Khayyam satellite was sent into orbit on Tuesday by Soyuz 2.1B rocket. Iran says it will also use imagery from Khayyam to monitor Iran's borders and improve the country's capabilities in management and planning in the fields of agriculture, natural resources, environment, mining, and natural disasters. After all, Iran is surrounded by US bases, and terrorists have preyed on Iran to enter its soil to conduct terrorist operations. Contrary to claims made by Western media outlets, Tehran insists the Khayyam satellite is fully controlled by Iranian experts and technicians based inside Iran from the very beginning of its launch. However, not everyone is happy about this satellite launch. The US expressed anger at Iran's partnership with Russia and accused Iran that the aim of the satellite is spying, something Iran has categorically rejected. The US has said they suspected that the satellite could be used by Moscow to spy on troop movements in Ukraine.
Yet, Iran is resolute in its cooperation with Russia. It has said it will continue production of such satellites with Russia, adding that it's a great honor for Iranian technicians to work alongside Russian technicians who have more than 6 decades of experience in the field.
Yes, well, the US government, of course, is particularly concerned about this. It really, in many respects, it should have seen this coming. It should have seen cooperation between states that it has under attack coming. But the arrogance, I think, of the US in particular, of Washington in particular, blinds it to these sorts of developments. They could ignore the fact, for example, that small states like Syria, like Cuba, were able to cooperate together. But when large states like Iran and Russia cooperate together, there's the inevitability. There's going to be new developments which free those countries, those peoples, from the domination of the US.
The launch of Khayyam satellite has been hailed as, quote, an important milestone in Russian-Iranian bilateral cooperation that paves the way for implementing new joint projects. It has ushered what Iran has dubbed as its strategic aerospace cooperation between Tehran and Moscow. Russia now says it's open to cooperation in the field of space exploration with all interested countries and partners, specifically Iran. The launch is also seen as a major achievement for Iran, despite Western sanctions.
Okay, so it's very important. The cooperation between Iran and Russia in satellite technology is very important because it shows a cooperation between large states with great capacity, which are both under economic blockade by Washington in particular. I would say Washington rather than the West, because really there are some mixed feelings in some parts of other Western countries. But certainly Washington is very jealous of any sort of independent achievement by Iran or Russia.
Iran says Western sanctions cannot stop its scientific progress. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has said that the successful launch of this satellite is a great achievement for Iran. This comes as Iran has made significant achievements in the field of science and technology in recent years. Earlier this year, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Aerospace Force launched its second homegrown satellite into a low-Earth orbit nearly 2 years after the launch of its first military satellite. The IRGC successfully put Nur 2 or Light 2 into orbit on March the 8th. Iran has already mastered the technology to build remote sensing satellites with an image resolution of 5 to 10 meters and can inject up to 50 kilogram packages into an orbit of 500 kilometers. But Khayyam can hit a much more precise resolution of 1 meter. Iran aims to achieve the technology to put a 100 kilogram satellite into the 500 kilometer orbit by next year.
Ten years have passed since the start of war in Syria, but the country still seems to be in the midst of a conflict. So who's fighting who, and why does this seem like a war without end? For years, the Syrian war was the biggest news story, but now not so much. Cities and railways are being rebuilt, domestic flights have even started up again. Meanwhile, foreign forces have, on the other hand, ramped up their efforts to push their own agenda. The UNHCR even says the amount of investment to fuel the ongoing crisis compared to the money to alleviate the impact of the war on the Syrian people is very little. When the war started, Syrian government forces fought against US and foreign-backed terrorists. The US, its allies such as the UK and France, as well as Saudi Arabia and others, sided with the opposition and supported these terrorists. But Syria's legitimate government also had its own allies, namely Russia and Iran. Amid the ongoing chaos, terrorists took advantage of the crisis and soon became a common enemy to everyone. Now, over the course of the years of conflict, Daesh continues to operate in northern Syria with the help of the US to achieve its own goals at the cost of the Syrian people. The US has been accused of both hiring terrorists and training them to destabilize the country. This comes while a large portion of Northeast Syria's crude oil resources have fallen onto the hands of the U.S. So does this confirm that the U.S. is in one way or another fueling the conflict to continue its illegal occupation and abuse of Syrian resources?
The big question is what right does the U.S. have to be in Syria at all? It has no right. And everyone wants the U.S. out. Probably even Eastern Europe, the EU probably would like the U.S. to be out. So the U.S. is working with the, other Syrian rebels, army defectors, rebels.
The Pentagon has confirmed that the Russian military conducted its second known strike in 2 months near a U.S. base in Syria. Moscow says the airstrike was conducted against a group of U.S.-backed militants in Syria near Al-Tanf. According to some reports, the U.S. then warned the terrorists to move their positions. The U.S. has used these terrorists interchangeably between Iraq and Syria to do its dirty work. It has also transported these terrorists to Afghanistan, with some reports indicating they were transported to Ukraine. The Russian strikes come at a sensitive time due to the Ukraine conflict and tensions between Moscow and Washington. The Pentagon is trying to ensure tensions don't escalate with Russian forces, including in Syria, where the two sides have operated in proximity to each other for several years. Both Russia and Syria have time and again stated that the U.S. is training former Daesh members. Moscow has even specifically stated that Washington is trying to further destabilize the country. It also says that the Al-Tanf U.S. base is illegal and that it and the area around it have become a void where terrorists operate unhindered. Since the Al-Tanf base formation, however, the United States has claimed that it's a temporary facility used to train partner forces to fight Daesh. It has rejected the Russian claims, saying Washington remains committed to killing Daesh and denying it safe havens.
And Russia warned the U.S. over 2 months ago in June. It said, we're going to be bombing. So, you know, and they were actually telling the U.S., oh, okay, we're going to bomb. So then the U.S. can phone up to the Mughawar al-Thawr, the commanders of the revolution, and say, you know, you're going to be bombed. So, I mean, I think that's stopped. I think the Russia's getting a bit more assertive now, and they're like the neo-fascists in Ukraine, and there the U.S. is supporting the same kind of rebel forces against Russia. So it's the same scenario transplanted into Syria.
The U.S. cut ties with Damascus over alleged rights violations by the Syrian government. But now, despite attempts by Syria, Russia, and Iran to rebuild the war-ravaged country, American troops continue their illegal occupation of parts of Syria, hindering any such attempts and further proving Washington's twisted logic. Japan commemorates the 77th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Survivors and relatives mark the blast anniversary with a minute of silence. The United States dropped the first atomic bomb, codenamed Little Boy, on Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, destroying the city and killing 140,000 people, mostly civilians and including many children. A second bomb 3 days later on Nagasaki killed another 70,000 and made Japan surrender and ended World War II. The bombs also left tens of thousands more dead in the months and years that followed, many from radiation-related illnesses. Many who survived the attacks continued to require welfare and medical care. During the memorial, the Japanese Prime Minister said the government would continue to support the survivors and demanded all nations to work together to promote the total abolition of nuclear weapons. It's still a goal far from being realized, but one held as strongly in the two cities that have suffered the most from such weapons. Meanwhile, the U.S., despite being the only country to have used weapons of mass destruction during war, seems to have learned no lesson from the horrific incident.
Their weapons should be eliminated from the entire earth. The United States, as a government, as a nation, has learned really no lessons. In fact, Although there was a strong movement to eliminate nuclear weapons in the 1970s, resulting in the Non-Proliferation Treaty, in which the United States pledged to eliminate nuclear weapons, it did not do so, and in fact, over the last few years, has committed, from the end of the Obama administration, to a $1 trillion nuclear weapons modernization program, which runs directly in the face of any commitment to eliminating nuclear weapons. And so it's really, the United States really has nothing to say about other countries having nuclear weapons until it gets its own act together.
In 1968, the world agreed on a new agreement, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Over 190 countries are currently signed up. Nuclear powers agreed to reduce their arsenals in exchange, others agreed not to have them at all. In the 70s, the deals between Russia and the US continued, more focused on long-range missiles, and though the rivalry between these two global powers intensified in 1991, there was a new START treaty aimed at decreasing the size of their arsenals and underpinning the West's justification for these weapons, which is an idea generally referred to as nuclear deterrence. But now Russia has intensified its rhetoric of using nuclear weapons in the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. The US and the EU, on the other hand, continue to provoke Moscow despite the threats.
Well, there really was no reason for this conflict with Russia other than the way in which it has aided the highly financialized speculative economy of the United States and, by extension, Germany, France, Great Britain, and Israel, which have committed to a system in which now, because of this massive printing of money and the creation of false assets, only a war economy can save them from this catastrophe. So provoking a war with Russia, a thoughtless and dangerous move, does have the effect of increasing the value of the dollar in the short term.
As tensions rise between these two countries, which still have the largest nuclear arsenals, the world is now forced to look at history and the present to avoid an incident similar to the tragedy of Hiroshima. During the 77th anniversary of the world's first atomic bomb attack, the United Nations Secretary General, while calling for disarmament, said the world is playing with a loaded gun.
And today, the world is in danger of forgetting the lessons forged years, 77 years ago. Almost 13,000 nuclear weapons are being held. Stockpiles are being upgraded. And the common thread of potential nuclear annihilation runs through geopolitical crises the world over, from the Middle East to the Korean Peninsula to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
A clear example of such threat would be Israel, which has persisted on possessing nuclear weapons. Iran has pushed for the establishment of a Middle East zone free of weapons of mass destruction, which the Islamic Republic initiated at the UN. But Israel won't comply. Tehran has even repeatedly warned that West Asia and the entire world is being threatened by nuclear weapons of the Israeli regime and urged international pressure on Tel Aviv to make it join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
بسم ربك الذي خلق
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآني
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
Assalamu alaikum, respected brothers and sisters. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Thank you so much for joining us again. I really share my condolences on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his noble companions to all the Muslims who love Imam Hussein and follow him, especially the Shia Muslims across the world. And may Allah Almighty inshallah accept your mournings, accept your expressions of sorrow in the month of Muharram for Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah.
So may inshallah Allah Almighty hasten the reappearance of Imam Al-Mahdi, the son of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, inshallah, to come and take the revenge of the blood of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, inshallah, and fulfill and accomplish the mission of justice, inshallah, in the world. Let's recite a salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajil faraj. So, welcome back again, Brother Hussein Ruhullah and also Ali Nasser. Inshallah, in this session, we'll continue our lessons on Mad. But before we go, I welcome you to and say hello to you. Hello, Hussein Ruhullah. How are you?
Assalamu alaikum.
Are you okay? Assalamu alaikum. Is everything all right?
Yes, sir.
Alhamdulillah. Okay. May Allah accept your condolences, your mournings, inshallah. How are you, Ali Nasser?
Alhamdulillah.
Everything is all right?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. So, inshallah, we'll go through the Mad lessons and Tajweed level 3 of our Quranic sessions. So far, we were practicing the different types of Mad, and we learned Maddul Iwad, Maddul Badal, and also Mad Tabi'i, and also Maddul Lin. Yes?
Yes.
So these four types of Mad we learned, so they were easy, no difficulties, Alhamdulillah. But now, today, we'll study a new type of Mad, which is called Mad Dul Aridi Lissukun. Maddul Aridi Lissukun, okay? Or a Mad which is not a type of Mad which is always we have to apply this Mad. We do not have this Mad always, okay, in the Quran. But this Mad is a temporary Mad. You know, temporary? It means just for sometimes, okay? It is there, okay? Not for always. Not permanently. We have permanently, it means for always, and temporary means just for a short time, yes? So what does it mean? That it means that this type of mad for four counts, mad du'arid lisukun, for four counts we prolong the mad, okay? It means this happens in one certain condition. If you have this condition, okay, you apply the mad. You prolong the sound, okay? If you do not have the condition, do not apply the mad. Okay, so there is one condition. Under one condition, we apply a mad. If we have that condition, it's okay. You apply it. If you don't have that condition, you should not prolong the sound. What is that condition? Can you recite Surah Al-Hamd? A'udhu billah, Hussein Ruhullah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Ar-Rahmanir rahim. مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين.
Thank you. It's enough. So now, look, I wanted him to pay more attention to the last part of the ayah. Now, can you read again? الحمد لله رب العالمين. Like recitation a little.
الحمد لله رب العالمين.
This sound at the end. Did you hear it, Ali Nasir?
Yes.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. This long sound. While there is no mat. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. This much sound it has to be. But when we stop at the end of an ayah, okay? And there is the condition I will tell you. We prolong the sound. Look. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين for four counts ولا الضالين لين while there's lam ya nun there's no mad only mad التابعي we have yes كسرة plus ya we have
yes
ya is ساكن مد التابعي two counts لين وَلَا الضَّالِّينَ finished not lean يَوْمِ الدِّينَ finished يَوْمِ الدِّينَ look at the sound how longer we make it yes we stretch the sound
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So the condition is this, that we have like three letters which are called Huruful Mad. Three letters. Alif, Waw, Ya. These three letters are called Mad letters.
Yes.
What? Huruful Mad. Mad letters. What does it mean? It means that whenever they appear in a word, try to focus and look, okay? If there is like, sometimes there is a mad sign, okay? You gotta prolong the sound, stretch the sound, okay? Sometimes some other conditions are there with these mad letters, okay, that you have to apply again the mad rule, okay, that in the next type of mad we'll study this. Mad jaiz munfasil and muttasil we'll study this one, okay? Right after mad arid lissukun, okay?
Yes.
Now, if you have at the end of an ayah, you want to stop at the end of an ayah, okay? Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. You want to stop here. You don't want to connect it to the next ayah. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم Look, I didn't prolong the sound. If I prolong the sound, it is wrong. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم This is wrong. Okay, Ali Nasir?
Okay.
So, a condition, the first condition is this, that you have to stop at the end of?
The ayah.
The ayah. If you stop at the end of the ayah, yeah, you met one of the conditions. The second condition is this, that there has to be a mad letter. Always there is, sometimes there is a mad letter, okay?
Yes.
Sometimes. But look, for example, in Surah Al-Balad, we do not have mad. لا أقسم بهذا البلد. We do not have mad letter to say balad. No.
Yes.
Okay? So two conditions are there. If we have one of these three letters, okay?
Mad letter.
Mad tabi'i we have. This were called mad tabi'i, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Alif maddi, yai maddi, waw maddi. If you have alif maddi, waw maddi, yai maddi, plus the next condition, you stop at the end of the ayah. All right?
Yes.
So, Ali Nasir, now recite Surah Al-Hamd once. Stop there and also prolong the sound. Four counts.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين
I think make sure okay that remember that it is not wajib to prolong it exactly for four counts it is just optional two four six any of them Okay, you might listen, you might have listened to the reciters of the Quran Kareem, okay, they sometimes prolong it for six counts. الحمد لله رب العالمين. Longer sounds, yeah?
Yes.
Sometimes they do not prolong it. Like some of the reciters, when they start with Bismillah, okay, they do not prolong the Rahim sound. Look. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Finished. But some of them, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Yeah?
Yes.
So because this is optional, this is not wajib, okay? But remember, 2, 4, or 6 counts. If you prolong it for 2 counts, it means you have applied the rule of madd tabi'i. 2 counts. Alif maddi, waw maddi, ya maddi. Okay?
Yes.
Let's go for some examples with alif maddi also and waw maddi. So, sijilin. Sijilin. Okay? Read it and stop.
Sijil.
Ahsan. You can make it like you can prolong it for 2 counts, 4 or 6 counts. Sijil. Okay? Usually, remember that 2 counts, when you prolong it for 2 counts, Hussein, okay? It means that you are going to join this ayah to the next ayah. So you do not make a pause. Okay?
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim Maliki Yawmiddin Iyaka.
Like this. Mm-hmm. You go on, okay? 2 counts. So if you want to connect the ayahs together, join the ayahs together, okay? So you do not have to prolong it for 4 counts or 6 counts. If you do not have exactly a mad, okay? Not mad tabi, any other mad, okay? Mad for 4 counts, for 6 counts. So, now do it. Prolong the sounds, okay, and also connect. See? Prolong the sounds, okay, of the last word in the ayah, okay, and also join it to the next ayah. Like, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Like this.
Bismillahi Rahman Ar-Rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد.
Great. He ran out of breath. That is exactly okay, an extra mad which is not okay here. Okay?
Yes.
So if you stop, one condition. Next condition, you should have one of these mad tabi'i. Alif maddi.
Wow, Maddi
and Ya Maddi. Let's recite a salawat, but before a salawat, let's give thanks to Allah Almighty first and foremost, and then IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network that, alhamdulillah, they're holding this kind of Quranic sessions. May Allah bless them all, inshallah. Let's recite a salawat, and we will be back, inshallah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools. فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.